Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
All right, welcome seekers to podcast number 98 of God Beyond the Bible. We hope 2021 has been good to you and good for you. We hope you're going to join us in declaring this year to be the year of personal enlightenment and spiritual discovery.
And our shout outs this week are to, I'm going to try this, MTMBNA, and I'm sure that stands for something, but I couldn't figure it out. I'm not very good at those, but we are glad to have you on board. So our quote this week is, until you make peace with who you truly are, you will never be able to be happy or content with any person or anything in your life.
Okay, in this month of February, we are trying to discover our true I am, our true identity, who I really am, who am I? And we've barely scraped the surface in the first two episodes of this, but this is the third of a four-episode topic. Mm-hmm. If we're able to answer the age-old question, who am I, then we'll be able to say, I am, and fill in the blank correctly. We've discovered that a great part of the journey to enlightenment and discovery of our own personal I am is a deconstruction of who I thought I was.
Yes.
Or, to put it in another way, as we've said before, the storyline we've adopted as self-identity. In other words, we spend a lot of time discovering who I am not, and removing those obstacles that veil and conceal our true identity. Does that make sense?
Does everyone have this identity crisis? Some think that we all spend our lives seeking to discover who we are, even from childhood. There's a rebellion that rises up inside of us when we feel like we're being pressured to be this or be that, or to feel about something this way or that way that seems contrary to something inside of us.
Well, and you hear people say it, especially for kids in their late teens going into, they're just trying to find themselves. They don't know who they are yet. And the truth is that at 30, I still didn't know who I was. So there's some good points from last week's episode that, in the week before, is that we must first realize that we have all operated or may still be operating with ego self as our identity.
And that's a big one. Mm-hmm.
Ego self is the person that we think we ought to be or want to be or desire others to identify us as. And so we role play to sustain this false ego identity. In short, our ego identity is the person that we perceive ourselves to be through the opinions of others. We have this storyline of how we think life should be, and we role play to convince ourselves and others that this is how our life really is. But living life through this ego identity is exhausting, and guys, it's unfulfilling.
Yes, yes. Another important point in the last episodes is that we have so many voices telling us who we are that we often adopt this external identity. A lot of us coming up through the influences of the church and Christian culture are living by a storyline that we are dirty, sinful, unworthy of any good, and that God can barely stand our existence because He's so disappointed in us. Now, this may sound a little strong, but this narrative of who we are is reinforced over and over again until we adopt it as our true identity. The fact is, this is another false identity. Think about this. If God is purely good and we're made in His image, how can we be the image of something purely good and be purely bad?
Another point that's worth revisiting is that many of us perceive ourselves as merely the sum of our life experiences. This may be who we think we have become, But who were we before we had these experiences? Was I someone before I had any life experience? The poet that we know as King David from the Hebrew text claimed that he had a connection to God before he was ever conceived or formed in the womb or born. He literally made this claim in Psalms 139. While we identify David as a great Israeli king and poet, he did not self-identify himself as this sum of his life experiences. He claimed to have identity before he was ever born.
And I can show you Paul did the same thing.
So if we, and we tend to think that those are predestination verses.
Not. They're not. Yeah. They're just identity verses.
Right. So we were merely, if we were Miller, we're just going to try that completely over again. If we are merely the sum of our experiences, then who we are, our personal identity, or our I am, is in a constant state of flux and change as our personal life experiences accumulate. But if we're not merely the sum of these experiences, but we have eternal identity. An internal identity before the world placed its perception of identity on us, then who is that?
Yeah, who was that before you ever had any experience? Who were you? You had no identity. You didn't know who you were. Yeah, I had identity when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, the external identity that's placed on me became my identity.
Mm-hmm.
We were given a name, and that's to identify us. But we did not choose that name. Neither was that name given to us to reflect our character or our personality. It was given to us before any life experience. It was given to us for an external world to identify us. Our name was used on medical records, on our birth certificate, and we were taught to spell and write it down. We were told, that is you. That is your identity. When we handed in schoolwork, we were taught to place that title on our work to identify ourselves, to connect us to our work. What that is, but the question we have to ask, is a title identity?
Well,
no. Think about it. The world gives us titles.
Mm-hmm.
So that can't be our identity if we have a true identity. And so I just wanted to point that out.
And I'll give you a fun little thing to go along with that. One of my friends had a son. And when he was really small, he always referred to himself as you. You wants to go to town. You wants to go. And I asked him, like, why does he say that? And she said, because every time you're talking to him, you say, will you bring me that? Will you get me that? And so he assumed.
He was taking that personal identity, that external identity,
yes,
very seriously, wasn't
you.
He? Well, okay.
Well, this may be why those who discover the mystic practices often adopt a spiritual name to identify themselves by. And I really love this. They want to escape the entrapments and confinements of the name that they have been given by others to identify them. It may seem a bit too mystical for those who are products of the Christian religion, yet this was a common practice even in Jesus's day. If you think about it, Mary and Joseph did not choose Jesus's name. It was given to them by God. He said, you shall call him Jesus.
And I want to say, I encountered, the first time I really ever encountered this in modern day life, I was doing a funeral a year or so ago. A young girl that I knew that I didn't know I'd do, she's 40 years old now and is an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Her name, I saw her name on the deal, and it was her first name, and I can't even remember what it was. And then it was a strange name, and there was and so I happened to ask her about it. She said, I changed my name. She said, my childhood was so traumatic, had such a terrible childhood. She said, I refused to be identified by that name that I grew up with. And she said, I found this Hebrew name, and I adopted this name. And she said, I even just incorporated. She said, I'm an attorney, and I just legally changed that and made that part of my name to find my true identity. And I thought, at first it was strange because at that time I wasn't all that enlightened. But, right, you know, and then now I thought about it. I thought, well, good for you. You did. You know, maybe we all need to do that.
Mm-hmm. I started to say, I was going to ask, do you guys think that, you know, maybe even if it's a name that we only refer to ourselves as in our minds or in our private, that maybe we need to have a spiritual name for ourselves to kind of pull ourselves away from that mask of who we are out there and this is who I am inside?
That's the way I was thinking when I wrote this down. That's what I was thinking about.
So Jesus told Simon that from now on, your name is Cephas, or in our English translation, Peter, the stone. Abram became Abraham. Sarai became Sarah. Jacob became Israel, and on and on. What was the significance of changing one's given name? I mean, if we research each of these name changes, we'll see that it was a result of spiritual enlightenment and a change in self-identity. The new name reflected who they really were, not who society and their personal experiences said they were. Think about it, guys. Simon was kind of a wishy-washy guy. Even after Jesus gave him identity from wishy-washy to the stone, it took Peter a while to adapt to his new identity. He still hadn't come into his true identity as the rock when his old wishy-washy self denied Christ. But the rock was in there. He had always been the rock, but his life experiences had identified him as wishy-washy Simon.
Well, one identity change that we have mentioned Abram to Abraham, Sarah to Sarah. And one identity change we haven't mentioned was that of Saul, the high-ranking Pharisee who became Paul, the apostle of Christ. This too occurred at Saul's point of enlightenment or spiritual awakening. Notice that, like the others, Abraham, Israel, Peter, and others, Paul's name change was part of becoming who he really was all along. It was, in fact, who he really was from the beginning, but who society and life experience told him he was shouted down this true identity and substituted a false identity in its place. And I like to call that what they receive is their destiny identity.
Yes, I like that.
That's a destiny identity.
Okay, well, let's get back to Jesus for a moment. Jesus was not given a name or identity by his parents. God named him Jesus, if you will, so he actually started life with his divine identity. His name actually connected him to God, who gave him identity. Let's jump forward 30 or so years to Jesus' baptism. We might say this was Jesus' enlightening moment. When John baptized Jesus, an audible voice was heard that said, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear him."
And let me say something about the destiny identity. This almost same thing, and a real clear picture of this happened with Zacharias and Elizabeth, mm-hmm. John the Baptist's mom and dad. Remember, Zacharias was determined to name him Junior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, basically Bar Zacharias, or son of Zacharias, and he was actually struck. He couldn't speak until the day he finally spoke. But the Spirit had said to him, the divine had said to him, "No, his name will be John." And even Elizabeth said, "Nobody in our family is named John. What kind of a name is John?" So think about that. God, there's certain people that God wants them to use. The people that do the most spiritual things in this world, have the most impact in this world, come into this life with identity.
I'm understanding their identity. I've not thought about that, but how important it must have been for him to have that identity from birth.
And it wasn't just for him. It was for his mom and dad.
Yeah.
They didn't place an identity on him. They were deprived of placing the identity on him that they wanted him to grow up with.
Wow. You know, it was the same story, though, with Abraham's son Isaac. God named Isaac.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
He did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that in there. A few things should be noted. First of all, that Jesus' defining moment of enlightenment did not result in a name change, as did others who had similar experiences. It wasn't necessary because Jesus' childhood identity in the form of a name was not placed on him by his parents or society, but by God himself. Jesus had the name of his true divine identity. When someone called his name or when he spoke his own name, he was using his true identity name.
And I want to say something about that. We mentioned Jacob. Jacob is who became Israel, right?
Yes.
Jacob wrestled with the deal. That was his enlightenment moment when he wrestled with the mm-hmm. angel, right? When mm-hmm. he and his hip got out of joint. He said he wrestled with a man all night and it threw his hip out of joint. Right. But he said, "I'm not leaving you till you give me blessing." He was looking for spiritual enlightenment. Mm-hmm. "You're not leaving here until I'm enlightened," is really what he said. Did you know what Jacob's original name meant?
Weasel.
Well, it meant deceiver.
Deceiver.
In other words, every time someone called him Jacob, they said, "Hey, liar, come here."
Mm-hmm.
"Hey, liar. Hey, deceiver. Come." Now, that was, think of how that would reinforce in you for your name mm-hmm. to mean. So God changed his name. He said, "Your name, the angel, said, your name is now going to be Israel. Now, Jacob didn't change immediately, but he grew into the name Israel,
mm-hmm.
which is a great nation favored by God.
Wow.
Just wanted to throw that in. Okay. Trayson, are you five?
You are.
Okay. Secondly, the voice from heaven that said, this is my beloved son. Did you just read that? No. Okay. Secondly, the voice from heaven that said, this is my beloved son, did not give Jesus his identity. It confirmed his true identity and affirmed it to Jesus and to those standing by. Just as Abraham, Israel, Peter, and Paul later received affirmation of who they really were, their true identity, the one that David spoke of that he knew he had, that identity that he knew he had before he was ever born and named David. So Jesus had his identity affirmed as God's beloved son.
Now let's look at the last part of the affirmation. The supernatural voice that spoke at Jesus' baptism also said, in whom I am well pleased. What was God so well pleased about? As far as the text tells us, Jesus hadn't done anything pertaining to his earthly mission yet. He hadn't even changed the water to wine. He hadn't healed his first ailing person. So what was it that God had to be so well pleased with? It was because God was always well pleased with Jesus, even before he did anything that we might classify as good or bad. He was well pleased in Jesus just for being who he was. Jesus had this identity of God's approval before he was ever born, and this truth was affirmed to him at 30 years old.
And I have to throw this in there because this is a verse that's been kind of circling through my mind with all of these. And it's actually one of David's Psalms. It's 139:14, where he says, I give thanks to you, Lord, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Have you ever just really thought about what he was saying there? I mean, this was the I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. We tend to quote that verse a lot, but we just sort of throw it. But David was really, you know, I am absolutely blown away by the incredible complexity and this inherent good that's within me because I know it's there and has always been there. It's a part of my core.
My connection to the divine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
And we kind of just want to throw that to a side. But like I said, that verse has just been circling through my head. So if you think about it, all of this name changing really didn't change anything, did it?
Well, actually, it did.
Yeah. The name change is a way of saying, okay, you are not who society has told you that you are. You're someone much more. If you'll adopt this new name, it comes with a new identity, or should we say your true identity of who you were before all of these external voices and experiences declared you to be.
And that's what we're really wrestling with, our external identity or our internal identity, our destiny identity.
I love that destiny identity.
Yeah,
another name we didn't mention was a character we know was Barnabas. Barnabas was an apostle whose name was actually Joseph. We are told that the other apostles changed his name from Joseph to Barnabas because Barnabas means son of a consolation, or in modern terms, the encourager. Now think about it. His name change was the first thing we learned about him. It's recorded at the end of Acts chapter 4. We tend to think that somehow his name change was a result of his actions of compassion and encouragement. When the truth is, none of his recorded acts of benevolent encouragement occurred until after his name change. Did you notice that?
I really had not. I mean, I was always one of those I attributed it to. Well, this is who he was.
Well, and then this next part kind of explains that.
So some translations say the apostles nicknamed him Barnabas, which means the encourager. A nickname is something that we give to a person who has demonstrated certain characteristics, such as Old Smiley, for someone who's known for smiling all the time. But this was not the case in any of the name changes that we see in biblical history. In fact, the opposite is true. The actions of the people who received the name change were a confirmation of the name that they received.
And this is why many Eastern practices of enlightenment begin with a new name being given to the seeker. One may debate whether there is any real spiritual significance to changing or giving a person a new name and title, but we cannot argue that there is a profound psychological impact. It gives the person permission to rise above all of the negative experiences and attachments associated with their identity by their given name by someone else. The new name represents who the person really is or may become. It's not an identity that's based on the sum of life's experiences.
So true. So, is it time for a name change? It may
Maybe
be.
Maybe it is.
Maybe it is. Well, until next time, may God's unconditional grace, peace, and love be in, on, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.